This podcast has been brought to you by King as part of their hashtag King of the Hill campaign. Stay tuned to King's social media pages for the rest of the summer for more hashtag King of the Hill videos and competitions.
Hello, and you're very welcome to the second in the series of King Crisp's King of the Hill podcast here on balls.ie. I'm Mick McCarthy. Alongside me is Mark Farrelly, and we are here to introduce a very special show this week, Mark, because on Monday night we had the pleasure of spending some time with none other than Bernard Brogan, Tomás O'Shea and Paul Galvin, three legends of the game of football.
Yes, big night in the Sugar Club. Was absolutely packed out. We had a great time. Between us, I think we had, between the five of us, we had 13 All Irelands, 27 provincial titles and 12 All-Stars on stage. Yeah. So
that joke worked better with an audience, I have to say. But
I don't know. We have an audience. Yeah. They're all laughing to themselves in their cars.
I like
or at
to
home
hear
or
their whatever. Laughter. It helps me, you know. It helps me a lot. Now that we're veterans of live broadcasts.
Veterans, yes.
Massive crowds. Yeah, so it was a really enjoyable night. The lads were all in great form. Any particular highlights you want to preview for the listeners before we play?
I particularly enjoyed Paul Galvin's story about the time he tried to shoulder Kieran Whelan and literally got whiplash. I mean, we all laughed at it. I think he was joking and he's like, no, I literally got whiplash. Like, I don't know why he was in Cork, but
I don't know either. Terrible Paul Galvin impersonation. You will hear from the real Paul Galvin, though, because let's get to it before we ruin any more of it for you. Just to note here that Mark was out in the crowd getting questions for the lads. I was up on stage with them. So without further ado, here it is. Bernard Brogan, Paul Galvin and Tomás O'Shea. Bernard, fresh off it, 7 in a row yesterday. That's 11 Leinster titles for you, is it?
11 now, yeah. Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I never thought that when I started in 2004, when we were beaten by, I think, Westmead that year, that we'd have 11 come now. So no, last night was brilliant. We had great celebrations last night, and so I'm a bit tender today. So
still doing the celebrations.
You're all still tender, is? No, it's great though. To win so many and to break a record. It's the first team to do 7, and Leinster is nice. I'm sure the lads that had a few down in Munster in a row. Did you ever do any runs, any streaks?
I don't know.
Yeah, a few, all right.
I don't know
how much I want. 7 or 8, I'd say, is all I want. Tomás has a few more.
That's
not
all.
Tomás a bit older, of course, than me and Bernard. So. He's around a bit longer.
Just a few years.
But you're still doing the celebrations. The Leinster titles still mean that something to you, that you can kind of have the few days off. It's not all just about starting the season in August or...
No, very much so. Yeah, we'll probably meet up with a few of the lads now tonight, and we'll celebrate like it's a piece of silverware. It's a very difficult thing to get your hands on. I know we've been lucky enough to have it go on a good run, but there's a long time in Dublin they weren't winning Leinsters. It's something that we celebrate. It's something probably you look back on at the end of the career and say how many did they win or what did they do during my career. But at the moment we just go out and we celebrate it. And then kind of just move on to the next game. But we'll take a couple of days with it.
I think you'll be joining some of the lads who are already well in session. There was Shane Carty was on Instagram earlier at a beach. Showing a little bit too much tie there, I think. what do you make of the shorts, Paul?
Yeah.
They're Dublin shorts.
They had the Dublin crest there, yeah.
So he's actually,
that was strategically put in, wasn't it?
Yeah. Game yesterday, yeah. Your own performance... Dean Rock obviously black-carded, I think, the 23rd minute or something like that. And you wouldn't have expected, I suppose, to come on so early, but like played really well, scored 5 points. Do you look at that straight away as an opportunity to make a mark and think about the rest of the season?
That's what I'm trying to do this year. It's a different challenge for me. I would have a lot of my career, once I kind of broke in, I played most games. I was nearly felt like I was guaranteed to be on the team sheet for a lot of it. So... just getting a bit older now, and it's a different challenge for me to try and prove myself that I have the legs. Like, the game is evolving, it's changed, and it's all about getting up and down the pitch, getting from box to box. There's a lot of a lot of movement around the pitch, and it's ever evolving. So it's about having the engine to be able to get up and down for 70 minutes. And Jim, for the last couple of games, was going to come on for 15, 20 minutes and finish us out. But yeah, I just sprung yesterday. I was actually warming up in the sideline. I didn't know what was going on. So I just ran on. You had to be called off and go through the systems and all or whatever. You had to write your name out. But no, just delighted to get a chance. And I'm gearing up for them, working really hard to get my body in good nick of doing the Pilates, the yoga, trying to get the body really fresh. And then when you get an opportunity, you just have to take it, because you can all see the competition out there with the team is unbelievable, and especially in the forward line for likes of Owen O'Garrett not get a game, he'll be disappointed today. It's just the competition is so ripe that you just have to, anytime you get a chance to run onto the pitch, you just try and do your best.
Yeah, I think Tomás, you probably went before that part of your career, you were straight off the team, but Paul, your last season in 2015, you were kind of in and out of the team, kind of off the bench and stuff. Was that like, you must just take a completely different mindset, having been sort of always one of the main people in the team for so many years.
I think like Bernard says, it's just a new challenge, really. It's just you have to find the most important thing is to show the right attitude to the group and to your teammates, and that you don't, you know, show any disrespect to the guy who happens to be playing, and you bring a positive spirit to the situation. I think you can prove yourself. You can prove yourself to the group in a slightly different way, you know, in that you can still help out the guys that are playing, the guys that are starting, but clearly inside you'll be disappointed, and you'll be making even more effort probably to when you get in to catch the manager's eye. And like, you know, I think no doubt Bernard did that yesterday. And that's just, I think ultimately it's just a test of character, and it's a great sign of his attitude. And unfortunately, it's not such a good sign now for the rest of us, the Kerrys and the Mayos and the contenders. But, you know, it's just part of the game, I think, that you have to learn to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about the 2017 Championship as we go on tonight. But another thing I was thinking, Bernard, is like the likes of Conor Callaghan, who was so like incredible yesterday coming into that team, is that there's always that sort of, you know, freshening up with the Dublin forwards. The longer you're around, and like the lads will have experience of this as well, when these youngsters are coming through, is there a balance between competitiveness and support and leadership that you have to find, or is there a part of you that kind of says, geez, you know, you're not taking my place, son?
Yeah, you have to be like that. Like, we're all massively competitive, and that's anyone that's on that, on any of the county panel, has worked really hard to get there, that has sacrificed so much of nights out and parties and all that to train, to get themselves into shape to be at that level. So when you're out there, you want to play. So, like, whatever you have to do on the training pitch to get into the team, you'll do. But then once you're off the training pitch, like, I'd see myself as an older guy in the group that has to kind of help those young lads, to nurture them, to get to send down the elevator, as they say, for the next generation. So I'd be talking to Con, just trying to help him, or Shane Carty, or Brian Howard, who's in now, who's getting game time, and loads of other lads, just trying to get them comfortable with the situation. But in fairness, the setups that, in fairness, Dublin County Board have put in, that these lads come in and it's seamless. When I came in, I was awestruck, and it took me 3 years to get me game, because it's just such an elite setup. I just wasn't used to it. I never played underage with Dublin. I kind of came into it a bit cold, and it took me a long time to get up to the speed of it. Whereas these lads are coming in, it's seamless. Like, they're coming in straight away and they're getting game time, and it's as if they were there for 10 years, you know. But all I'm trying to do is be as competitive as I can when I'm on the pitch. But when I'm in the training room, or eating, breaking bread after training, I'm just telling them how they can improve themselves, little small bits that might just help them to progress. And it's all about the team. It's about the greater good at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a very professional attitude. I know that there's a famous story in, I think, a Dennis Walsh book about Davy Fitz, when there was a Clare goalkeeper coming up the ranks, and Davy knew his route to work, and he'd get out at 6 o'clock in the morning, go in, puck a load of balls up against the wall, see your man passing by, and think, oh Jesus, I don't know, how am I going to get past this lad? Davy sees your man, goes, gets back into the car, drives home, goes to bed for a couple of hours. But surely, Tomás, lads coming through in Kerry, did you ever have any of those tricks or anything like it?
Not really. I just put the head down, you know. It was always around April time, when the National League was finishing up, when it was just beginning to come into Championship. And if there was some other guy in my position doing well, you'd say, Christ, I have to knuckle down here really fast. And I think Bernard said it there. If everybody has the right attitude and everybody's working hard and they're pushing each other on, I was very lucky. I never started a game. Oh, I did once for we had a couple of points myself in the good, so I started it on the bench. That was the one only time. We retired after these guys beat us in 2013. But no, I think the competitiveness inside in all the top teams have it. If you have competitiveness inside there, it just drives the whole thing on, and it's seamless. And you can see it now with Dublin, the fact that they've been around so long. And I think we had it as well. Didn't matter when, what year it was, it just kept on going from game to game to game, and it didn't matter if you were playing Wicklow or Limerick or whatever, same attitude was there every game, and it's brilliant. Like, once you have it, you have it.
You got the bit of advantage from Coldplay up the hill end yesterday, Kildare lads slipping all over the place.
Yeah, well, I actually benefit from it because I got my first score off Ollie Lyon slipping when I came onto the pitch. But yeah, I think that obviously the concert was there and the pitch was only, the sod was only down and fresh. I think it's actually back up now for you two this weekend. So not ideal for I know a couple of our lads slipped as well. So that's the pitch is usually immaculate. So that's kind of like, it's something that you can't really help. They have to kind of, in fairness, the Coldplay was an amazing concert, so I can't give out about it. I enjoyed that. But no, it wasn't. The bounce of the ball was a little bit different, but nothing major.
Mark's in the crowd.
You're speaking there about, it took 3 years to get your chance. When you do get your chance like that, how do you make sure that you don't waste it? I'm asking for a friend, by the way. it's not me, you're on it then.
Yeah, like it's a difficult one. Like, obviously, you want to make sure that you're... I kind of felt that when I got my chance, I'd been around for so long that it helped me that when I'm in the Croke Park, I'd been on the bench for 70,000, 80,000 people loads of times. So the crowd didn't distract me, the occasion didn't distract me. It was more about just trying to get out there and just doing the simple things right. And if any advice, and the lads will probably agree that when anyone's coming into a big game or you're trying to make an impact, it's about just doing the simple things well. Trying to get on the ball, get the ball, move it across, and then you'll get into the game and then you can express yourselves. But just trying to get into a game and that's all I ever tried to do, just try and do the simple things. Get one ball, pop it off, or get a ball. If I get an opportunity, try and get a good strike, get a score. So about doing the really simple things really well, and then your kind of expression and your talent will show, I suppose.
I'll pass that on to my friend. We've also got Mary here. She's got a question for the Kerry lads.
My question is, when you're playing against Dublin in Croke Park, how do you manage to silence Hill 16?
Three or four goals.
Yeah. Try to outscore them.
Or we used to just give it to Gooch and let them at it.
We used to love playing the Dubs, not because it was just the atmosphere and the whole tradition, and you were guaranteed of a full house, and you were guaranteed of I used to love actually playing into the hill. I thought it was, I have great respect for the Dublin supporters. I think they bring something special to the game that nobody else does. I remember playing in Thurles in 2001. We played two games down there. They were probably the two best games that in terms of passion and atmosphere, that they were brilliant. But there was no problem getting yourself up for the Dubs or trying to quieten them. You tried to do everything you could. You couldn't quieten them all the time. And Hill 16, when Hill 16 is in full flow, it's a tough place to be when they're actually...
What year did we mark each other? 2008. He scored a point off me from half back and I didn't score at all.
No,
he shut me up quick enough.
I was sitting inside in the sitting room maybe 2 days ago and my young fella, we're based in Cork now, but he'll never wear a Cork jersey. He's mad into to Kerry. But we were sitting down and he's a TV. I don't know how to work the TV, but all these moments were coming up on YouTube. And he says, well, I put on the National League from last year, the final. He said it was coming up. And I said, no, look at the 2007 match there. Yeah. You know? So he said, put it on. And it was a great match. I didn't realize. My memory of games would be very poor. But Bernard was number 12, I was number 5, we were marking each other, you did score the same day actually, because I saw it, yeah. But I didn't realise it was so close, and look, the tradition is always there, it will always be there. I think it started with Heffo and Dwyer, it's gone through, there's always been a good link between the teams, but it's good, you know, you'll always remember it.
It built out a mutual respect, I think. Both teams know the effort that they put in and the kind of tradition in both counties for football. And it's a bit more special for me because my mum was from Kerry and would have spent a lot of my childhood there kicking ball down the back way in Listowel.
It's like the worst thing Jimmy Deanhan ever did for Kerry football. Was
I remember marking Allen at the end of a game one year, and it was the year that we beat you very well above. And I was marking him at the very end of the game. He said, "Fuck this, I'm going down joining fucking Estoril." I wish he did.
So just going to talk about like the rivalry of the last 10 years, say. If you look at the 70s and 80s, it was like an 11-year span between 74 and 85 where they played each other seven times. Kerry won five of them, Dublin won two. Other than the classics that everyone remembers in kind of 77, 76, 77, 78, they weren't really close games, but it's renowned as the greatest rivalry of all time. In the last 10 years, they've played each other six times. Dublin, you guys have won four. The last four, Kerry won the first two. But other than that 09 game, all of them have been really close. The 2013 game was 7 points, but it was the closest 7-point game you'll ever see. It all started with that 2007 game. Like Declan O'Sullivan's goal was the difference in that game, as you say. But when 2011 came around, it was, you know, you guys were just on the back of that hide in Croke Park, 16-point defeat. Kerry were well ahead in that game. What was the difference for Dublin in just being able to stick with it and not losing belief?
In 2011?
Yes.
I think we were hurting from 2010, to be honest. We had a really good team. We were beaten by Cork. We gave away a 5-point lead with about 2 minutes to go. And it was something that Dublin teams were renowned for, was giving, like, not finishing out games or not pushing all the way home. Something we really worked on, like, just talk through it and the mindset piece, and I kind of really dug into it about how do we actually become a team that's actually had to finish games, that's strong, that's resilient, that can just drive through and believe in the process, as you hear Jim Gavin talking about. But it's very much the case that you're there, you're trying to do the things, keep on doing it, and not wavering left and right. And that's what happens when you lose. So in 2010, we obviously were very disappointed in the semi-final. Cork went on to win the All-Ireland. And we used that as energy coming into 2011. About any game we played, it was our All-Ireland final. We took each game one at a time. We said, this is the only game that matters. We're going to play it. We're going to play it to the end. We're going to play it as well as we can. And that was the model we took through every game. And then we went into the final. We just said, this is going to be a ding-dong of a game. We always knew it was going to be a really tight game. Dublin-Kerry, as you said, is always an amazing atmosphere. It can go either way. So we just said, let's just stick it out to the end. And then we also had the benefit of Kevin McMillan as well.
Which is an added bonus. And Stephen Cluxton's light jog up to the 45. Paul, before that game, you guys had just come off a really disappointing season in 2010 as well, where you were caught by Down. And obviously the last time you used to play the Dubs in the Championship was, as we look at Tomás famously handing the ball to Cluxton after the game. You guys, had come off that defeat, but had previously beaten the Dubs by 16 points. Did you think it was going to be a different Dublin team that you came up against that day? Or was there...
I think there was always going to be probably... I think it was our first time meeting them since the 09 game. So, I mean, there was always going to be... The 09 game, we probably couldn't... You know what I mean? That wasn't normal circumstances, really. So we just had to say, yeah, look, we were going back to that period of time, we were in a really sticky patch. There was a lot of pressure on us and the team was finished and blah, blah, blah. So, like, that was a huge game for us.
In 09.
In 09, sorry. That
this
turned out to be
after
the end.
Tomás went drinking.
This was... He wasn't... He wasn't alone anyway, but we were in a tough spot, and it was unusual, that game. The result was unusual, so we didn't really buy into that a whole lot. And then it probably made things a little bit more difficult for us in 11, in that the lads would have been probably, you know, they would have been saying, that wasn't right, 09 wasn't right, that's not normal for us. And so there was always going to be, 11 was just, you know, All-Ireland finals just are you take them on their own merits. Okay. They're a kind of a different animal to a normal game. So, we thought we'd win. We felt we could win. But, like, you know, I look at 11 for us then, and I look back at 6-7 months of strength and conditioning training, 8 months even from November. That was thrown out in June. And we start, all our S&C work that we had done goes out the window. We changed tack completely in terms of our S&C work. We start doing some completely new, different training techniques that we were all kind of unused to. And I tend to look back at that stuff and go, that must have had some kind of an effect on the team and our ability to go the distance in a game where you've done a block of 8 months' work and it gets thrown out and you start to do something entirely different come June. That's kind of the thing that sticks in my head when I think back in 11. But there was lots of stuff, like, you know, to me, Dublin that day, you know, people say we were unlucky, and I don't buy into that myself. Yeah. I think there's always reasons, and I believe in the law of accumulation. And I think you do everything the best you can do, session by session by session by session, and you cut out the room for error and the room for things to go wrong. And we changed things up a little bit during the year, and I don't know if that had an effect on us and our conditioning and our ability to see games out.
So you see, you win by a point in injury time. It's more than that. It's more than just a kick of the ball.
I think so. I think if a team does that, you're entitled as a team to go, geez, lads, what a win that was for us. That's because we did. You know what I mean? You can be sure, and Dublin are still showing the signs of that at the minute. They're doing things right. They have methods and they have a process and they have a way of doing things that they believe in, and I think you have to have that. And if you don't, you can come unstuck in a given day if you don't have these, if you don't have these structures and systems and plans and that kind of thing. So that's my own theory anyway. I'm going on about it.
Tomás, you were going to come in there?
No, I just think Bernard touched on it there. He said that they had difficulties closing out games. We didn't, and I think that was the first time, and I used to think about it a lot after games, especially games you'd lose. That was the first time that I felt we should have closed out a game, and we didn't. And we didn't because Dublin closed it out better than we did. And that was basically the difference. You know, they made things happen. You know, they got their turnovers, they got their scores, they got their goals. Cluxton kicking an absolute pressure kick. It was a kick worthy of winning an All-Ireland, you know. I think that's the one thing you need to do as well. You know, no matter what you're feeling inside, you lose graciously as well. And I think it was a turning point, and I think that win gave Dublin serious confidence. And every time they came against us again after that, whatever we had over them, it was gone, you know. And it was every time we played them, we felt we could win. But I think after that game, I think it was a turning point.
They felt they could win. Is that fair enough?
So, yeah. Well, yeah. Winning breeds winning, I think. Like, you look at successful teams of the past, and Man United or Kilkenny, and Kerry and Dublin, to a certain extent, that when you keep on winning, you start to believe that you're going to win, and that's when you start closing out games, because you just believe that you're just going to figure it out a way, and that's what happened. And there's been loads of games, like even this year in the league, where we got back from games against Tyrone. There were games where we were beaten in, and then we came back and just dug out a result, a draw, just because you believe you should be in that position come the end. And then just the sport just goes like that, you know. If you believe it, it will happen, you know.
Something that gets forgotten, you know, a very important but a simple thing that gets forgotten a lot is actually just fitness. You know, this is an exceptionally fit Dublin team. And I go back to 11. I even look at my own shape and my own physical conditioning in 11. I was coming off the back of a hip operation at the end of 2010, missed a lot of the league in 2011. Was I as fit going into an All-Ireland final as I could have been in 2011? Probably not. Were Kerry? I'm not so sure.
What happened there? You were saying that they changed things up.
There was a change in the back room, Justin.
And just
some people went and some new people came in, and there was just a bit of
were the players against it at the time?
It wasn't an issue for the players. We weren't really involved in the decision. Okay. So, you know, fitness, simple fitness and ability to go beyond 70 minutes to 75 or 6 or 7 minutes is, you know, you can look at that game and you'd say, were we physically able?
Yeah. Well, actually, I want to know if that's changed, because if you look, the 2011 game, Kerry are up by 4 points in the 64th minute. In 2013, you're up by 6 points in the second half. Early enough in the second half, lose by 7. 2015 was a different type of game. Dublin are ahead for most of that. Last year, though, Kerry are up by 3 with 10 minutes to go and lose by 2. Is this a continuing problem?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the methods are like and the S&C is like at the moment, but you could ask that question, I think. You know, but I believe going on the league final that maybe that gap has been closed a little bit in terms of the fitness aspect.
But with Dublin, the one thing they have at the moment, one team this have is, it doesn't seem, they don't seem panicked if they're 3 or 4 points down. they have a kind of system of play and they stick to it, and it's just all systems go and they wear a team down. And it has to be a very good organized team that will keep on top of them. You know, I think I was listening to, I don't know who I was listening to this today on the way up. They reckon that Kerry Dublin, which they haven't been tested so far this year, that the great sign of a team is when they're 3 or 4 points down in the second half, that they can drive forward and have that belief. And there's no, you know, Dublin have it at the moment. They do.
Yeah. It never felt like it was 3 points down in with 10 minutes to go last year. There was something about that game where you guys definitely never thought, you didn't feel like you needed to go for desperate goals or anything like that. You could always play your game and kick your points.
Yeah, well, that's like, I think if you have time to force things, it won't work. So, like, as the lads are saying, it's about sticking to that, sticking to what you do well and just trying to dig it out and having the belief that you're going to dig it out, I suppose, is something that this Dublin team has tried to build on, probably starting in 2011. But yeah, like, it's come the end of the game, and it's like, it's hard to say where it's at. As Paul says, the league this year, Kerry look like they've got the bit between the teeth, and they'll be challenging. So both teams have a long way to go this summer before we meet. But it's been an interesting championship. It has been so far.
I won't dwell on the past too much more, but I do just want to talk about that. The 2013 game, it was the last time the three of you were all on the pitch together. It was your last game, Tomás. But for me, just as a spectator that day, I think that's like my favourite ever game of football. It just sort of had everything. Bernard, from your point of view, you were kind of having a tough time, like kind of like the Gooch in 09, I suppose, for that game, where it all just came together on that day. Do you remember? Am I remembering it wrong that there was a bit of pressure kind of coming on? I don't think you'd scored against Cork or much in the Leinster.
Yeah, no, I've kind of had hit and miss summer. But the Dublin, just the Dublin Kerry game is such a big thing for me. And I just went out there. Mark and Mark O'Shea had some great battles. Mark usually gets the better of me, but I always love the encounter. You know, when you're playing Kerry, you're going to be playing football. You're going to be toe to toe, and as a corner forward, as you want. You want to put yourself against the man beside you, and see who's better and comes out on top. And like, again, that day, and I got a few scores off Mark, and we came out on top in the end. But yeah, it was just like any time. It was just an amazing game of football. It was to and fro. It was exciting. It was a spectacle. This, like as you said, people say it's the best game of football to ever be played. Like it was an amazing football game.
Like, I don't know, Paul, if you remember too specifically, but like as a forward line that day, the first half performance by Kerry was nigh on perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was when we were at our best. It was very much a pass and move, heads up, and move it and go. And that day in particular, I think we did that quite well. And I think you have to be to this current Dublin back six. You have to be a ball player. You have to try and make the James McCarthy's or the McCaffrey's or the Keane O'Sullivan's. You have to give him a problem on the ball that he has to come out and try and defend you and mark you. Otherwise, they're too good. You know what I mean? These guys are so fit and so fast. They can sweep, or they can go up the field and create something on the other end. So like, you have to be a threat on the ball. And I think that day we were. I think Jim Gavin did quite well as well on the day to counteract certain guys. He made some very decisive decisions that I think probably changed the momentum of the game a little bit. I remember. It was the first day that game, I remember thinking, feeling there was something different about Dublin, in that there was a really physical, aggressive edge to them. Even though we were probably getting around them in the first half, particularly defensively, they were leaving us know that, you know, we were in a game. And I remember thinking, yeah, there's something different about them that day. But yeah, I wasn't really until afterwards. I thought about the game. I was one of my most disappointing losses that day. I remember just being, because I knew probably it was in my head. I wasn't sure if I'd be back. I thought at that time I didn't think I would be back, and it was a sore defeat, particularly to have played so well for long parts of it. You know what I mean? We'd win that game most days against most opposition, haven't played that well, but there was something about those fellas on the day. No. I'll follow runners.
Not like a packet of King after reliving the great days. Tomás, what was it about that day? As Paul said, he thought about calling it a day, and I know you went back for a couple of months in 2014, Paul, but what was it about that day that made you think enough's enough?
I'd be shocking, actually, with memories of games. I'd look at a game, and I don't remember much about that game. I remember Michael Darren McCauley's touch, and I remember McManaman again. He said, "Jesus Christ, have we not sorted out that man yet?" You know, the way he just cut through.
And then tried to chip it over the bar, and it went into the top corner.
I know, yeah.
Still says he was going for it to this day. Yeah.
No, but I do remember straight away after the match was over. I remember by the time I got to the tunnel, I knew that I was gone. Like, and I actually, going into it, I never actually thought about it. I never thought about retiring or anything. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, I gave up football completely for a year after it, and I didn't play with club or anything. And I went back playing after, and I kind of regret that I didn't stay around for another year. You know, especially they won it the year after. Yeah. I was getting into an elevator in the team hotel the year after, and it was late enough, and I was just pressing the button, and there was a guy slumped on a chair. He was after having a great day himself. And he just looked up at me and he says, "You clown." I thought he wouldn't know. Like, he says, "You clown, you should have stuck around." And I says, "I should have, yeah." But no, I was happy enough with it.
You've just ruined our quiz for later on, but sure, we'll
have I?
We'll cross that bridge when we get
there. No, I look, it was a classic game. All the classics that Kerry played in it, we lost. 77 in 2002.
No, but I was just thinking there's a danger. I was at the league final this year. And there is a danger for Kerry, because those games, 11, 13, 15, took on a similar pattern, really. Close games, Kerry winning, Dublin winning it in the end, yeah, and getting through. And the league final was very similar. You know, Kerry could have lost that league game late on. Mm. Guys breaking through the middle, a lack of shape in the Kerry defensive half that these guys are brilliant at exploiting. And, you know, it was amazing, actually. But you find that, I find, with Kerry and Cork and Killarney as well, often year on year it was like the same game. They just follow this kind of formula, yeah. And Dublin and Kerry seem to be following the same formula at the minute, and the league final very nearly was the same script. I know Dean Rock missed that free, but there was also, previous to that, there was goal chances that they didn't take, that could have been 11, 13 and 15 all over again. So, you know, Kerry, you know, yeah, both sides have work to do, but Kerry would have to be worried, you know.
We'll talk about how the rest of the championship is going to go. But Mark, have you got some questions?
Yeah, indeed. Patrick here in the brown jumper in the middle of the row, Bernard, has a question for you that I suppose applies to you as well, Paul. In terms of club football, it's the one major honour you've yet to win in All-Ireland at club level. And he was just wondering what you made of the revamp, and also if that is something that, you know, that really keeps driving you on.
Yeah, we've been lucky to lose in three finals. Yes, yeah, so we're still chasing. We're getting a bit old. That's the challenge now. Yeah, but the club thing is a massive kind of, I suppose, not regret. It's just something that we haven't got over the line. Been very lucky to be very successful with Dublin over the last number of years, and we've had a great team in Plunkett's. And this year we had another great run. We thought we were going to have a great run, and we got pipped by Castleknock after beating a good Ballyboden team.
And that was a ref in that match, Bernard. No, I would say nothing, sorry.
It was a very sore point. Alan popped the ball out of your man's hand in the last kick of the game to rob it, fair as you like, and a free in, draw a game, and they burned us an extra time because they're all 19 and 20 years of age and we have an average age of 35 or something like that. But yeah, and obviously Paul was involved and brought great leadership and great energy to the group as well, and brought in, kind of just driving us on, because it's hard when you're talking about that same script of having a really good team, thinking you have the right mindset, thinking you're on the right route, and then just not having that same challenge, like not having the right mindset coming into games. We're beaten by Bridges in the final. We should have beaten them. 6 points up against 5 points. I think it was actually 6 points up against Kilmacud in our first final. Two goals, last two kick high balls in, and then Vincent's beat us well in the other final. So it was a tough one to take this year. Now, because of the circumstances that we had a really good run in, and we trained really hard, we were in great nick, we were really buying into it. as Paul will probably agree, and then just to be taken away from you from a result, from a decision. I know referees have it tough, but it's not easy to take. It doesn't make it any easier.
Paul, how did you enjoy playing with the lads this year? I know you took a year off, didn't you? Played hurling last year, wasn't it?
No, I mean, I would have loved. I basically thought of that All-Ireland club, that All-Ireland club medal, and I thought, you know, Dublin clubs, if you can win what is probably the best championship in the country, most competitive championship in the country, if you can win that, you have a great chance of an All-Ireland club medal. I'd known the boys for years, Alan particularly, and so my motivation to win medals just is still there, and I would love to add that All-Ireland club medal to the collection. I wouldn't say no for sure, it's just the age, look, you know, you got to consider what you bring to the group and if you can bring enough to the group and all that kind of thing, but it was a disappointing. It was a disappointing loss.
There's a certain kind of old school championship heartache structure to the Dublin Championship, isn't there? The straight knockout. I think it must be one of the only knockout championships left in the country.
Yeah, it's very cruel for lads who they already struggle. Like if you're in the championship, you have to wait all year for Dublin to finish up or the intercounty, and you're the whole summer when it's like that out there today, and it's beautiful. Conditions to play football in, and you can't, and you're sitting at home trying to get 15 lads up training because people are going away in their holidays and stuff. I just think it's very difficult on club players, and especially club players that get knocked out like Ballyboden and us 2 weeks later, we're out. It's very hard for the club now to motivate over the summer because lads have holidays planned. There's a bit of a league, but the games are like two games 1 week and then you have 3 weeks off and then another two games. It's just so hard to keep lads motivated and sort of thing, kind of drive on, you know, just that the carrot goes out of the year for you when you get out of club championship. So I definitely think that more games in the championship and that round robin gives you a chance to get stuck into it, and then if you're not good enough to get out the other end of it, at least you've had a go at it. But just for one game, like that one moment to knock us out when we thought we had a really good chance of winning it, you know, it's just disappointing.
Exactly. Mark?
More question just on the club theme.
Hi lads. I think you've half answered that anyway, but I was just wondering, Bernard, you're playing now with a Kerry man that you might have had a big rivalry with over the last few years. I'm not stirring anything, by the way, but Paul, same with you, with the two Brogan lads, and Tomás, I think he did a bit with Nemo, is that right?
Still there, but sorry.
I'm just wondering, is there a big dynamic, is there a difference in the dynamic coming into something like that? Obviously, inter-county teams are made up of club players who could be kicking each other around the place during the autumn, but they get around it every year. But I'm wondering, is it any different moving from Kerry to Cork or Kerry to Dublin, or having a Kerry man move in to push you for your place in Dublin? Or
yeah, I think it's obviously a little different. The dynamic is a little bit different, and you just have to... It's a bit unfamiliar, and you know, well, you just have to bring the right attitude and get to know guys and show a bit of honesty and show up, train, and I think that goes a long way. If you're just there, you make the effort to train and just be one of the guys and show a degree of honesty. I think that's really all you have to do. Then you have to perform, obviously, in the field, but you know, for a start, I think that's very important to show a degree of integrity about yourself, you know. The way I looked at it, you know what, I played in college with UCC, and for me it felt a little like being in a Sigerson squad, you know. You're with guys, I played in college with guys from Cork that I was hopping off like in championship games a few months later or whatever, guys from Tip, guys from all over Munster. So that's what it was like for me, you know. It was guys from different counties, and you just, the important thing is the commonality of spirit and that, you know. So
there's a few people getting in touch with us using the hashtag King of the Hill on Twitter. Elaine wants to know, Bernard, who was the hardest hitter, Kieran Whelan or Tomás O'Shea? Random question.
Well, Tomás, yeah.
I can tell you, I hit Kieran Whelan in 2004, a shoulder, and I had whiplash. I actually had proper whiplash for months. Because Eamon Fitzmaurice was marking him, you see. He was centre-forward, he started centre-forward, and Eamon was centre-back. And I said, if I get a chance, I'd just in the game, I thought I'd try and slow him up a bit, because he was a big guy and he was coming against me, and I just went with him. I went for him with everything and I hit him. My God, I hit the ground so hard. I was just in shock on the ground. I was going, phew. And I didn't feel any pain at the time, but like afterwards, like I was walking around for days like this. Yeah, no, I hit Kieran Whelan in the shoulder. Yeah, I'll be all right.
Ina Rourke wants to know, have training methods changed since all the panels started playing? Tomas, you might like cross the generations most. You're the oldest, I think, the problem.
I remember when I came into Kerry first, it was 1997. And it was like, that time, there was no backroom team. I remember Paddy was the manager, and I used to live just across the road from him, and we'd spend a lot of time in his company, so we'd see how things worked. And to be fair, like, he was the guy ringing the hotels for food, he was organising the pitches, he was doing everything. We'd drive over, he organised the session, he took the session, he was doing everything, you know. And I think after a while he brought in John O'Keefe, and John O'Keefe did it. But the training itself, in terms of, I think the training, the one thing I didn't enjoy about the training towards the end was the length of it, and actually the way it was broken down, and a lot of it was tackle based, and the drills were different. I think when we went in with Jono just ran us. He basically ran us. There was a, I think it was Mick O'Dwyer's kind of philosophy was basically 30 laps. And I think there was a funny story told about him when he was in County Laois. The lads weren't too happy with the way he was training them, and they, in the most polite way, they kind of asked him, Mick, could we talk to you, please? And he says, oh, yeah, no problem. He says, could we just change up the training a small bit? You know, it's kind of, you know, we're doing 30 laps every night. He says, no problem at all, lads, no problem. So when they walked out on the pitch, he says, we'll do 30 laps. We'll go this way this time. But I think the training has changed an awful lot. An awful lot for the better. I think, like, one gripe I used to have was, how could you train Dara O'Shea the same as the Gooch? How could you put him lifting the same types of weights? You know, could you put him running the same lengths? I used to always have I was around the middle, and I loved training hard. The harder it was, the better, you know, because you always knew coming into games you were ready to go then, and the fitness was there. But I think the fitness for an inside line would be different. It's like the rugby lads. You don't train a prop the same way as you train a fullback or a winger, you know, and that's the only way. I didn't enjoy the trainings at the end because of the length. You know, we trained hard in the early days, but towards the end, I didn't enjoy it as much, no.
Yeah. And it's not just even the training that's changed. It's kind of everything that goes around being a player these days. There's no kind of, you know, you'll celebrate for a couple of days after winning the Leinster title, but, you know, you're looking after yourself 12 months of the year really now, aren't you?
Yeah, well, it's just, I suppose, the competition and everything's just been rising up a level. It's gone so professional. As you talked about Paddy there in his own, now there's analysis, there's videos of the games that you do your homework on, there's nutritionists, there's strength and conditionists, there's physios, there's all sorts of different people that are obviously trying to put you in the best position to perform at the weekend or whenever the game is. So training has evolved a lot, and kind of there's just a level of professionalism in it that we go away from the training, and it's nearly more about what you do away from training than actually that training, because the training, there's someone there holding your hand and they say roll up there and run around in a circle or do a tackle box or do this or do backs and forwards. It's when you're away, and we were talking earlier on inside about our diet and how we like to look after ourselves, and your Pilates or your mindset, if you're doing a bit of yoga or you're doing a bit of meditation, whatever that is now, it's about those lads that are really performing or the lads who look after themselves well away from the training pitch.
Mm. Mark?
Yep, got some more questions here from the crowd.
Hi, I have a question for Bernard. I'm just wondering, you've won so many Leinster finals. Does every final feel the same when you win, or does it feel any different?
Yeah, I'm ultimate competitive person, and I want to win every game I go out there. If I play a game of five-a-side, I want to win that. I want to win every game. And then when it comes to like yesterday, I wasn't starting on the pitch, so that was a challenge for me, as I wanted to try and prove myself, thinking I might get 10-15 minutes, and then it changed. An opportunity came where I had to go on, and it was just about trying to make a difference, trying to add to what's out there, and trying to do my best. And obviously that's coming off winning the game means that we worked, in essence, my whatever I was adding on the team, it was working. So every time you go out to win, and 66,000 people in Croke Park, like it's I'm still living my dream, you know. When like when I was a kid growing up, I wanted to be part of it. And the atmosphere yesterday was unbelievable, and you guys, I'm sure a lot of you were in there, the crowd was unreal. Like that's and it's as you get older, you start to I start to appreciate that stuff. Like I'm come running out into the game and saying I'm not starting today, and I just look at things a bit differently, you know. And as I said, I'm so used to playing, and it just becomes an everyday to you. But now it's just something different, and I'm just looking at things a bit differently. And that, like, yeah, yesterday's game meant a lot to me. It meant probably a lot more than some of the ones in the middle. That was just kind of every year, let's say the third, fourth, and fifth one. That was a big one for me. Hopefully not my last one, but it was a big one for me, definitely. Yeah.
Just talking about this year, then, like, it's shaping up really, really well with what happened in the league final. Kerry going really strong. Tyrone looked really, really good yesterday. And have waltzed through Ulster. Like, nobody ever does that, you know. They won all their games by 10 points. Paul, the league final, you've mentioned it a few times there. You're even worried a little bit about the pattern of the game. How much did that mean to Kerry to finally do that, even though it was only the league?
Well, I think it was important from a point of view that you had a succession of defeats over the last two or three or 4 years, whatever it was. So, do you know what I mean? It was just important from that point of view to say, all right, that's a line in the sand kind of thing, you know. Plus you have a new breed of a Kerry footballer coming through now as well, and it was great for them to get a taste of a win in Croke Park, you know. And so I mean it was a statement, it was a mini statement, I would call it a mini statement only. The next battle between Kerry and Dublin, whenever it happens, will be a monumental game. Probably will be this year. And I just think it gives Kerry a bit more belief in what they're doing and how they're going about things, I think, to just have that win under their belts rather than to be looking for it again down the line, maybe in September, you know. So.
And to prove that Dublin are beatable, because it had been so long since Dublin had lost a competitive game. I mean, did the streak matter to you? Was the word streak even used privately?
No. Like, we actually didn't even know until, obviously, the media got into us and started talking about it. But it was actually a relief to get rid of it, as much as you never want to give Kerry any oxygen.
And I said it afterwards. It was a good result for both sides.
Yeah,
it was a good result for both sides.
Yeah, get that out of the way. Just on Kerry, you're saying that it's a young breed of player. It's a new breed of player that mightn't have done it. I was looking at the two teams from 2013 and the league final this year, and the change is incredible. Donegal Walsh was the only forward left over. Now James O'Donoghue will come into the team. He didn't start the league final. And I think three of the backs and Brendan Keeley, who's now gone off the panel, but he started there, were the only players that survived. There's more turnover than I think people really report on in Kerry. You know, there's a lot of kind of new players now. A lot of them have come in for 2014, and some of them have All-Irelands under their belt. But this is a team that still has to go out and prove themselves.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think it's been a challenge probably that's been maybe lost on people in terms of for him, and in terms of the transition in the team and trying to manage the older guys who were there, bring in new guys and try and keep that momentum and stay competitive. And, you know, Kerry's form probably over the last three or four years has probably been patchy if you look at league and championship. And that's probably as a result of the mixture and trying to get the chemistry right and the balance of the group right and that kind of thing. So I think now you see this is really this year, I think, is the start of a new generation and a new team.
Yeah. And Tomás, what are your thoughts? Like, there's a lot of players there that I still don't think nationally we know all that much about. We've seen them in one or two big games, but are there players that you're thinking are going to make a big breakthrough this year, become stars? Or is it a general strength of the team, 1 to 15?
Yeah, I think, like, when we... One thing, even in Kerry, a lot of Kerry people would be guessing what's going on inside in training or who's playing well. And when we used to train as a group years ago, we'd have open training sessions. So there could be, coming up to an All-Ireland final, there could be 2,000 people watching us train. And we would actually line out the way we would line. It was crazy when you think about it. We'd line out the way we were going to line out for the final the week after. And nowadays, there's young guys coming into the team. We've had good under-21 teams. We've had good minor teams coming through. There are a couple of lads. Jack Barry, I think, is a great bit of stuff around the middle of the field. Tadhg Morley is another player who I think is going to make an impact this year. And I think the big thing with Kerry and Eamon is they were playing from game to game. You know, they faced Cork the last day, and it was a big game for them in Killarney, and they got over that. And I think the big one for Kerry is the next game. It was always, you play a Munster final, and we had always a big gap. They don't know. It'll possibly, I think, will be Mayo that'll probably come through. Yeah. I think that's a very dangerous game for Kerry. I think coming through a back door, we went through a few back doors, and it was difficult, and we were struggling coming through a back door. But there was a performance in us. I've always believed there's a performance in Mayo. They haven't been going great this year, but I think it could be a very dangerous one for Kerry. Obviously, a lot of people would love to see Kerry and Dublin down the road. I think it is a good possibility, but I think it's a very dangerous one for Kerry in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, very hard side to draw. And like Bernard, I know you're not going to talk any further than whatever the next game is and whoever that might be against, but you know, there is obviously a long summer ahead. We're nearly wrapping up. Mark, do you have anything else?
One thing I was just wondering, Paul, you mentioned earlier on about the close games you have with Kerry in that last 10, 15 minutes. I suppose you have to be fit physically, but also mentally. And you've talked before about the way you play your game, that you were trying to get the ball into Gooch, you're trying to help Tomás or Mark out behind you defensively. So, like, how do you stay disciplined in those last few minutes? Or do you try to say, you know, I'm not going to go up here and try and save this game for Kerry, where I'm going to get it to the Gooch, or I'm going to do whatever that can help the team?
Yeah, I suppose fitness plays a part, a big part. I think if your fitness, if your physical fitness is good, your mental fitness, you know what I mean? I think both are linked, and if you're in good physical shape, you'll be in good mental shape. Yeah, I mean, like, that was my job, like, and I think it's probably, that position has probably changed a little bit in the last number of years, where you have a sweeper or maybe two sweepers back there who are taking care of that defensive side of things, so maybe the wing forward position isn't as defensive as it has been. I think there probably isn't as much breaking ball, or hasn't been until this year possibly. The mark looks to have maybe brought back the longer kick out again. The last two or three years there wasn't as many long kick outs, so there wasn't as many breaks, so the kind of half forward breaking ball defensive type half forward, that position probably changed a little bit, probably affected Paul Flynn a little bit, I think, in that regard as well. But yeah, that was my role. Like, I think Mikey Ganey is a man I'd have high hopes for now in terms of that kind of a role for Kerry. I think he's a very, very good player, and he's a guy I'd expect now to expect to have a big impact on the championship this year.
Right. Just a couple more questions that were sent in on Twitter. Ryan Mulligan wants to know, will the Kerry men do the indefensible and defend Pat Spillane? Don't know what you're defending him for. Tomás?
Oh, well, I won't. Look, Pat says things and we all say things, I suppose. You know, I remember, I think it was, I don't know what,
that's a great Kerry answer. Pat says things and we all say things.
Look, Pat has been, the name of his book was Shooting from the Hip. You know, he says things, and I often would love to put together, if somebody went back and on Brolly and on Pat, on, and I'd say they contradict each other. So, you know, Pat could say something one year, and the next year he'd say something absolutely different and believe that he believes it. You know, I think they say things for the sake of it sometimes. I really do. I missed that night what he said, and it was a big hullabaloo. I don't know what it was all about, to be honest with you. I didn't think it was that big a deal to get flustered over. You know, I thought it was... Pat says things, you know,
If you look yesterday for the Leinster final, the Gooch was sort of sitting in the middle of two shouting old men trying to talk sense. Oh, it was stop. A sort of...
I've worked with Brolly. He's a nightmare. I'm actually working with him now again next weekend, and I was looking at the roster, and I'm 2 weeks on, and I'm working. I actually rang the man today. He says, "This is the fourth time I'm working with your man. What's going on? Like, is there something?" But he's a nightmare, because you get a slot, like, and when you're working, the boys will say, "Right, we've 3 minutes here, lads, on chat," and you have something good in your head, and it's tough enough, like, when you're on the spot to be thinking of it. And Jesus, next thing your man will start ranting, and you're there thinking, Jesus Christ, he's gone 2 minutes now, and I'm not going to get time. And you literally get a second, and then they'll just go, like, they just go straight to cameras or whatever it is. And he's a great guy, lovely fella off it, and he's good fun and all that, but a nightmare to work with.
Last question then comes from Frank O'Mara, using hashtag King of the Hill. Does Paul give the Kerry players fashion advice? Or did he, I suppose? I doubt you're still doing it.
I don't give anybody fashion advice.
You didn't give Tomás fashion advice for that?
Well, actually, no, the funny thing about that is I did. I told him not to do that. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
He texts me and he sent me a picture and he goes, I'm thinking of wearing this for the Sunday game. And I said, Tomás, don't do it.
I was inside. It's a long day inside there, and I was there. I actually had a tie with it as well. And I was telling the boys inside, and I was working inside there all day, so all the lads were around, the production team were around. And I was telling him I had a dicky bow for the night and it looked good, and I was hopping balls and everything. So I came into the studio with the tie on, and your man, the head guy, the editor, came down. He says, where's the dicky bow? And he called me out, like, and I wasn't sharp enough at the time. This is my first year. And he called me out and he says, just try it on for a second. Just try it on. So I tried it on. He says, I'm not bullshitting you. He says, it looks good. he was thinking of numbers and ratings.
It does look good.
It looked good if you were at a tuxedo show.
If you're at the Oscars.
Bernard, a career in the Sunday game coming up for you. When is that, about 4 or 5 years down the line?
Well, if Broly's still there now, I don't know. No, not yet.
Right. Just time for our few giveaways. We've got tickets to the All-Ireland quarter-final between Dublin and whoever they'll be playing in Hill 16. And we've got a football signed by the lads. We're going to do a little quiz. Mark, who's going to win the prizes?
I think we might split them up. I think the two club questions, so I think we're going to give Patrick the ball and Neil will get the tickets.
Okay, great. Well, what we're going to do is, and one of these is going to be very easy, Bernard, because he's already told the story, but the two lads write very interesting columns weekly in the Sunday Times, the Irish Independent. I'm going to read out an excerpt from three excerpts, and you have to tell me which of the lads wrote this. So I'll start with the first one. I was very good to myself match week. I spent a full day in the relaxation room of a hotel spa 1 year. I didn't even have a massage or any kind of treatment. I just lay robed on a bed in the relaxation room, eating fruit and drinking water and reading magazines. It was the one place I knew no one would talk to me. Talking isn't allowed in the relaxation area. It's perfect. The staff knew the drill. They kept me in kiwi slices, apples, orange slices, mangoes, tea and water all day.
Definitely Paul.
Well, do you know what? In my defence, the week of an All-Ireland final, you don't want to be talking to people. And I said, where can I go now where nobody will talk to me? And I said, the spa room, the relaxation room over in the... There's a hotel next to my house. And I spent a whole day inside there, because there's no talking allowed in there. So that was my rationale.
Did a very good selection of fruit, I have to say. It wasn't just your apples and bananas, you know? So this one, right, like, just to keep the suspense up, you never know, the same thing could have happened twice. This was after the 2014 All-Ireland, when both lads had retired at this stage. So I was thinking I'd made a right mess of things, that I'd been wrong to retire. Selfish thoughts. Fuck it. I could have signed off with another All-Ireland. I went back to Jury's that night, and heading up to my room in the early hours, there was a Kerry supporter slumped in a chair by the lift. He looked comatose to me, but the moment I touched the lift button, his eyes opened, and without so much as a hello, he goes, you fucking Egypt. If you'd stayed around for another year, you'd have another Celtic cross. We'll skip on that one, the answer to that one.
Get a few new stories. Okay.
The last one. This is a guy we haven't really talked enough about tonight, I would say, actually. But I keep in touch with Declan O'Sullivan on WhatsApp. I invited him on a trip to the States next month, but he can't go because he's been to Iran numerous times in the last few months for work, and he would need a special dispensation to visit the US. If they try radicalising that man in Iran, they'll get a fright. He'll get them all into a dressing room and they'll leave driven men with a glaze in their eyes and take up football.
Holly.
Paul. Well done. We win the tickets. All right. I want to thank you all for coming tonight. I want to thank Mark, to all the production team and everybody else. I also want to thank King, great sponsor. Stay tuned to King's social media pages for the rest of the summer for more hashtag King of the Hill videos and competitions. And most of all, I want to thank the three guests who were brilliant entertainment all night. Paul Galvin, Tomás O'Shea and Bernard Brogan.
Thanks a million. We'll see you again soon.